Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 11 of the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. As always, it is brought to you by our good friends at the Ankeny Office of Iowa Realty. They are located at 1802 Southeast Delaware, suite number 103. They are the proud sponsor of Ankeny Fanatic. They have 75 agents specializing in residential, commercial, farm, and land properties. Well, we have a couple of different guests lined up for you today. In a little while, we'll be talking to one of the three coaches who guided the Ankeny Little League Intermediate All-Stars to the Little League World Series. They just wrapped up play last week, so it'll be fun to hear about their experience out there in California. But first, we want to welcome in our first guest. He recently retired as the Ankeny Girls head track coach after a long and successful career. He was a five-time regional coach of the year by the Iowa Association of Track Coaches, among many other awards. He is Dennis Adams. And Dennis, thanks for coming in. How you doing?
Good. Glad to be here.
Well, how's your summer going so far?
Going well. Got outdoor projects underway and trying to finish some of those up and just enjoying the summer. Yeah.
Well, you announced your retirement at the end of the season in the spring. You know, was that a tough decision for you?
It was a tough decision. Every year after I retired from teaching, I retired from teaching in 2009, my wife and I would always talk about, well, how long are you going to keep doing this? And I said, well, I still enjoy it. It's still a lot of fun. I know it's a lot of work, but I enjoy doing it. And I had some guidelines. I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to stay so long that it wasn't fun anymore, you know, showing up in practice and not wanting to be there. I wanted to leave whoever was going to be next a good team, you know, chances to build on that, and those were the main things. And so I still liked doing it. It was very hard to make that decision. I toyed around with it for a while, back and forth and back and forth, and when we got back from the state meet, I had decided about 2 weeks ahead of that or 3 weeks ahead of that that I was going to wait till after that and tell the girls. And that was a hard thing to do, but I've enjoyed, you know, everything that's happened over all those years.
Now, you retired from teaching several years ago. What year was it?
2009.
Oh, okay. So obviously you've been doing it now quite a while after you gave up the teaching. You know, were you able to devote more time then to the coaching after giving up the teaching?
Yes. It always took a lot of time, and I would always ask my wife, how did I do this and teach at the same time? And she said, well, because you were always down there after midnight doing things. So I could devote time during the day for things like that. Coach Krusik, who's the head coach at Centennial, coached on my staff before he became the head coach at Centennial. And he made a comment at the banquet after I retired from teaching the first couple years of coaching after retiring from teaching. And he said, well, the only thing I can say is his retirement from teaching was the best thing that happened to the Ankeny track program because I could devote more time to it.
Oh, I'll bet. Well, I know Mr. Butcher told me that he hasn't started the search for your replacement yet. You know, do you think he's waiting for you to change your mind?
Well, he might be, but I think I'm too far down the road now. I came in towards the end of the season, and he said, well, we have a new retirement form. It's a giant piece of wood, and we'll give you a chisel and a hammer, and you have to type it out with the chisel and hammer. It might take you all summer or maybe next year.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, do you know if any of your assistants are interested in taking over for you? You know, are you going to have any input on who replaces you?
I don't think I have any input on who replaces me, other than I did, you know, tell Brent that I had some ideas of the kind of coach that we would want. I think there is one assistant that has applied for the job, and the last I heard, there were maybe four that had applied. I'm not too sure how many of them are in the district. I think that it closed, the applications closed last Wednesday, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, with the tradition that your program has, I would imagine there would be, you know, some interest in that job.
Well, I would think so. Like I said, I left a good bunch of girls, so.
Well, let's talk about your coaching career a little bit. You were track coach for 44 years, the last 38 at Ankeny, the last 28 as the head coach, a head girls coach. You know, when you first started coaching, did you ever envision that you would, you know, do it for this long?
No way. I ran track and played baseball and dabbled in football and basketball, which I wasn't good at all. But when I first got my first teaching job, it was after Title IX, and schools were looking to add girls' sports. And so this is in Trenton, Missouri. And the principal called me in. He says, well, we're looking for coaches for all these girls' sports. I need a track coach. What do you know about it? And I said, well, I ran track. He went, okay, you're the best qualified so far. So that's how my track career started. So then I had to get a coaching endorsement, and it wasn't something I had thought of, but I'm sure glad I made that decision.
Well, coaching as long as you did, I'm sure you coached, you know, kids way back when, and then eventually probably coached some of the kids of those kids, right?
I forget when that started happening, but yes, I've had several kids that I coached and students I taught, and I think on the current team there might have been four parents that they would come to a meet, and I'd look at them and say, okay, I had you, you had me in class, or I had you in, you were in my class, and they said, oh yeah, and so, yeah, it's happened for a few years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but that's been fun.
Oh, sure. Well, do you think the kids in general have changed at all over the years? Have you noticed any changes?
You know, when I taught, every year as a teacher, the teachers would talk about Ankeny kids. And this was when, you know, I started in 1979 here in Ankeny. And it was always, every year, Ankeny kids are Ankeny kids. And you would think, as big as this town has got, that would have changed. But they're still Ankeny kids and just some of the best kids to be around and to teach.
Well, I can echo that. I've been here almost as long as you have. So in dealing with those kids over the years, you know, I can certainly agree with you there. Well, your team's won a state indoor co-championship and had two outdoor state runner-up finishes, mm-hmm. as well as six conference titles, 10 top 10 state finishes. You know, you've got a lot to be proud of, don't you?
I do. The pride comes in watching those girls set goals and work hard and wanting to achieve and help each other out. And you learn a lot of things over coaching so many years. Anyway, I did. I think I approached it these last few years, maybe the last 10 years or 15 years, differently than I did when I first started. You come to realize that it's, even though of course you're coaching a competitive sport, but it isn't all about the medals and the trophies and things like that. It's the relationships the kids have with each other, the things they learn as being in a team sport. And I always talk to them about it's like the cherry on top of a banana split if you get that medal or you win that championship or whatever. It's, and coaches talk about this all the time, but it truly is the journey getting there. And all the things that happen along the way. I have kids that were on my teams or in my classes, and when they reminisce about things they remember, it's never, oh, I got my medals framed somewhere or I put my trophy up on the, it's things that happen among the team and lessons they learned and fun they had. And that became, I think that's a motivation for them to want to be there and to do well. And if things happen that, my gosh, we, you know, got first or second in this event or whatever, that's a bonus.
Well, I remember you telling me when you first announced your retirement that you always enjoyed the successes of those kids who were maybe like a fringe varsity kid who dropped 3 seconds in a race just as much as, like, you know, the elite kid who won a state title. I mean, any success you really enjoyed, didn't you?
That's what was great. I mean, at the end of this season, I had a couple of kids that in their last meet at the regional dropped those times and got their season best or qualified for state in an event that they didn't think they were going to qualify in. We weren't sure how many we were going to qualify in, but we got some in that, you know, the coaches and I said, wow, it would be really cool if this event got in, but they're going to really have to run well. And JV varsity kids right on the edge there, and we put them in a relay, and the 4x2 made it to state, and they had a great time, and that was just as fun as watching us have the fastest prelim time in the 4x1 at state.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you did coach several individual and relay state champions. One of them was Laura Ashoff Jumper, who won four events at the 1996 state meet. At the time, she was only the seventh athlete to accomplish that feat, and she was later inducted into the Iowa Track Hall of Fame. What made her so good?
Well, one thing that always makes any athletes good is that, you know, you're physically good. I mean, you're a good athlete. You're built that way. It's in your genes. But it's also the desire to work hard, listen to the coaches, take criticism and praise in ways that you know it's going to help you out. She just was a competitor, and she did what it took to get out there and go. And everybody can work real hard. Sometimes the more you work doesn't always mean that you're going to be the best. There's going to be somebody else out there to beat you sometime. But she was just a really hard worker and a great kid to coach. She was very coachable.
Well, that 1996 team placed second in Class 3A with 62 points, which was the most ever for a state runner-up at the time. Now, you guys probably would have won a state title in just about any other year. It took a historically good Ames team, you know, to beat you guys. Did it take a long time for you to get over that, or maybe you still haven't gotten over that?
Well, yes and no. It was one of those things where when you look back at it, that, oh my gosh, we got second place in state and scored all those points, and, you know, Ames and our team became quite rivals that during those late 90s period. So that was a little, but it became easier to take after a while, because like I said, you look back on it, and what I remember are the kids and their attitudes and how hard they wanted that. And it would have been great to win the state championship, because that's always, you know, a goal that you have. It became kind of hard to get out of my mind, because when we had the, it's now the Henderson Junior High meet. We would always help with that. Coach Ducey and I would always help set up that meet that whole Saturday. It was a long day. And they would always have the helpers come to a dinner put on by the Girls Union. And Mike Henderson would always get up and thank everybody and make a speech. And every single year for at least 5 or 6 years, he would say, oh, and here's Coach Adamson. Just so you remember that he had the highest total points ever for a second place team. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there were little digs at times from people about that. But, no, those years were so fun. In fact, and then we did it again in 97. We ended up second. I think it came down to the last one or two events that we were ahead, and then we'd run out of events, and Ames had the 4x4. And there's nothing we could do.
Yeah, you guys had some great teams back then. Boy, it was so much fun to cover those girls. Well, they recently held the Junior Olympics here in Des Moines, and they had the U.S. Track and Field Championships at Drake earlier this summer as well. Did you get a chance to go to either of those or be involved somehow?
Yes, the USA Track and Field Championships, before I even decided that I was going to retire, I set up some, I put it out to the team, if you want to come and help, and rub shoulders with some of the best track athletes in the United States. Come down to that, and we can carry baskets. Those meets are so well run. The Drake people just know how to put on a great track meet, you know, Drake Relays and USA Championships, and I'm sure the Junior Olympics were the same way. So the girls had a very good time of seeing, you know, world-class athletes competing.
Oh, I'm sure you saw some great races down there, didn't you?
Yes. We saw the race between Simpson and, the 800 girl from Iowa. 1500 girl from Sioux City.
Shelby Houlihan.
Yes,
yeah.
Shelby Houlihan. Yeah. I sound like a very knowledgeable track coach here. But anyway, that was a great race to watch.
Well, I want to give you a chance to talk about the Historical Society Museum a little bit, because I know you've been trying to gather some photos and some clips of some of Ankeny's championship teams from over the years. What can you tell us about that project that you're working on?
Well, if you haven't visited the Ankeny Historical Museum, the down on 3rd Street by it's off 3rd Street and School Street. We have some displays that people have given us, artifacts that people have given us to put in displays. And we have a lot of softball and a lot of girls basketball. We have some football stuff, and we have some artifacts from other sports too. But as we looked at it, we thought, well, what we should do is try to maybe equalize this out, because there are a lot of sports teams that have won championships, and try to put the word out to the town that we are looking for members of the teams, coaches, even fans from the community who would like to do some interviews, because we're going to include some video in the display. Also have some artifacts, some photos, some newspaper articles about all the Ankeny team championship teams. So I think that we counted up, there's about 55. I think the first one was in 1969. It was a baseball or a track team. And then on from there. And we'll include Centennial and Ankeny in the whole display, so it's an Ankeny sports display.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if there's anything that I can do to help you out with that, let me know. I don't have a whole lot of photos and things from over the years after my transition from the Register to Ankeny Fanatic. But yeah, if there's anything that I can do to help you out, let me know.
So what they can do is contact the Ankeny Historical Society. We have a Facebook page and a web page. It's the Ankeny Area Historical Society. And you could Google that and find our website and find our email. And they could call us or send us an email if you want to help us out with the project. We would take anything, you know, anything's going to be considered to what we had that we could put in the museum display.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that sounds like a great project. Well, the last thing I wanted to talk to you about today is your love of music. I know you're a big fan of several different types of music. Now, I assume that this started when you were a kid. Was there a certain group or a musician that kind of got you hooked on music?
Well, since I grew up in the 60s, this is probably going to be, you know, something you would expect, but my parents, when they listened to the radio, didn't listen to which was the pop station in town in the early 60s, which was KIOA. They listened to KRNT. So I got very familiar with, you know, like Mac the Knife and Frank Sinatra and some of the standards they were listening to. And then when we heard that there was going to be this new group from England play on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1964, then I first saw them, you know, perform on that show. And like a lot of people my age, especially guys, looked at them and said, okay, that's what I want to do. So that got me to change the radio stations. It got me interested in music. And I've been interested in music ever since then.
Of course, you're talking about the Beatles, right?
Yes, sorry.
I guess I was never a huge fan of the Beatles. I mean, I followed them, but I had a chance, I think it was last summer, to go see Paul McCartney when he came to Des Moines. That's the first time I'd ever seen him. Man, it's just amazing what that guy could do at 75 years of age. That was a great show.
Yes, he puts on a great show.
Well, now, do you have a favorite type of music, or are there several different kinds that you like?
I'm pretty eclectic. I'm not into rap or hip-hop. Probably other than Hamilton, that was fun. But it's mainly, you could call it, what are the labels they put on it? Americana music, folk rock. But then I listened to, the CDs that I have listened to in the last, or bought in the last 6 months or something would be Radiohead, Beck, Steve Earle, Casey Musgraves, that's a little country. Mm-hmm. In fact, I made a list. There's The Decemberists, I like them. I bought a Van Morrison CD. Courtney Barnett, I got a chance to see her down at 8035. Mm-hmm. So that was fun to see her. Sturgill Simpson, I really like. I didn't get down to Hinterland to see him. Robert Plant, Arcade Fire, I don't know, just on and on.
Yeah, like a lot of those groups you mentioned there. Certainly some of them would be considered alternative, but I think a lot of bands, it's just hard to classify them. I mean,
It is. I'm a lyric person, too. A lot of my friends find out, you know, because I always talk about what this song is about, you know. So I really pay attention to the lyrics, but it's got to sound good, too. But a combination of those two. I used to use it in my teaching a lot. I would include music. In fact, a lot of my students will come back and say, hey, remember when you played this? Or remember when on one Friday, you know, like we got done early and we delved into the Is Paul Dead? And we looked at all the clues in the back records and things like that. I would make little videos for the track team, or we made a couple of little short videos of songs and pantomime them as motivation. Or I'd make little films for the state meet, like using Brothers in Arms from Dire Straits.
Oh, sure.
Put that to pictures of them and things like that. So, yeah, I'm a music guy. Concerts, I spend lots of money on concerts, probably too much money on concerts.
Yeah. Oh, I do too, for sure. Well, I remember seeing you at a Wilco show several years ago. I think it was at the Valair Ballroom.
Oh, yeah.
That was one that I just happened to get free tickets to. I probably wouldn't have gone to that one. But do you have like a most memorable concert that you've been to? Probably been so many, it's probably hard to pick one. But
yeah, there was a Paul Simon concert at Hilton, I think, that the sound was just amazing. Just off the top of my head, I just go back to that one, like whoever the sound people were on that one did a fantastic job. In fact, when I go to shows at the end of the concert, if I thought, okay, that was a great, they did the soundboard great because you could hear all the instruments, it wasn't too loud, it was, you know, you could hear the lyrics, I'll go back to the soundboard and tell the guys at the soundboard, hey, good job. Mm-hmm. And it's really funny because they look at me like, well, thanks. Like, nobody does that very often.
Probably not. Well, I think my most memorable concert was several years ago. I went to Minneapolis with a buddy of mine. We went to see U2 at the outdoor, the Minnesota football stadium, the Gophers stadium. And it just poured like crazy. And of course, the band was covered, so they just kept playing.
Yeah.
And we just sat there for like, I bet for an hour. I mean, it just poured. And, you know, never forget that.
No. Well, speaking of Minneapolis, there was a concert I went to. It was the Grateful Dead, Tom Petty, and Bob Dylan. That was interesting.
Oh, I bet. Well, do you still have anyone on your bucket list that you want to see that you haven't seen?
I haven't seen you two that you just mentioned. As a big one, I don't know. Not really. There's Todd Rundgren's going to be here this fall, and I bought tickets to that. So we'll see what that one's like.
Yeah, I saw that. That'd be an interesting one. Yeah, probably the one left on my list is Bruce Springsteen. Have you ever seen him?
I have, a couple times. Yeah.
Because I know he puts on a great show.
Yeah. Long, fantastic show. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to see him. Well, what other things do you plan to do, you know, during your retirement?
Well, I was counting up how many books that I actually got to read since I've retired from teaching, which has been fun. I love biographies and histories and music books. I read, like I've read this summer, I think, two Beatles biographies, one about Joni Mitchell, a Neil Young biography. So I love doing that. Traveling around, I've got a goal to hit all 50 capitals. So I actually, you know, go into the Capitol building and do that. So I'm getting close. I'm over 30, so I'm getting there. Some national parks we haven't been to, states we haven't been to, just traveling around. What's fun is to go to some of the historic places that I taught about.
Oh, sure.
In U.S. history and visit the actual places. That's been fun.
Well, sounds like you got plenty of things to keep you busy there. Well, Dennis, thanks for coming in. Appreciate you doing that. It's been fun to catch up with you.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. All right, you're listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast, and joining me now is Ashley Grandgeorge. She is one of the real estate agents here at Iowa Realty. Ashley, how you doing?
Hi, good. Thank you.
Well, why don't you tell me a little bit about what it is that you do here?
Well, I am, like you said, a real estate agent here at Iowa Realty, and I represent Kyanite Design and Build, a local builder. We have several developments. We have homes in Grimes, Bondurant, and Ankeny. We have a new, brand new development on the northeast side of town called The Crossings at Deer Creek in Ankeny. And we have some homes going up there that start in the mid twos, and a ranch, a two-story, and we think it's gonna be a really popular place. Ankeny's really growing.
Oh, I'll bet. We're getting down towards the end of the summer here. Is this still a pretty busy season for you guys?
Yeah, actually, business has picked up. With school starting and everything, I know everybody wants to be in their homes by the time school starts. And in here in Ankeny, we have great schools, as everyone knows.
Now, if anybody's interested in any of the properties that you talked about there, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Well, you can look me up by Ashley Grandgeorge
at iowarealty.com.
Yep, or my phone number is 515-313-6148.
All right, Ashley. Well, thanks for coming in today. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Well, now we want to welcome in our second guest. He is one of the coaches who guided the Ankeny Little League Intermediate All-Stars to the Little League World Series. He is Corey McClure. Corey, thanks for coming in. How you doing?
Thanks so much, Dan. Good to see you.
Oh, good to see you too. Well, I know you guys are having a welcome home celebration tonight. I don't know that this podcast will be up before that happens, but in case it is, anybody hears it, where's it going to be?
It's at the band shell at 6:30. It is kind of overwhelming. I'm sure people are sick of this team, but it's just a nice... welcome home to the boys and recognition of their accomplishments and the parents who supported them. And so I think it'll be nice. I hope it's nice.
Well, you guys certainly went on an amazing run. You know, when did you know that this was a special team?
You know, we played for our district tournament. We played the Johnston team that went to Williamsport last year. And I still haven't figured out why everybody's so locked into the Williamsport as opposed to this, but they are. And we knew that that would be tough, and we had to beat them best two out of three. We we swept them, and we beat them pretty handily. And that's a great team. Nothing against that team at all, but we really we had two kids pitch complete games and just shut them down, and we got our hits, and we swept them. It was at that point that I thought, we're going to go to Sioux City now for state, and we have a chance to maybe get to Michigan. I mean, and beyond that, I had no expectations, no illusions that we were going to be able to do anything else. But that's when I thought we were pretty good.
So then you guys went to state, and was it Indianola that you beat in the championship there?
It was. So we played round robin, kind of double elimination in there. The Sioux City team was a little lacking, but Indianola was really good. And we took it to Indianola the first game, and then they took it to Sioux City. We took it to Sioux City, got them out of there, and then we had to play Indianola, obviously, again on Championship Sunday. Had we had lost the first game, we would have played another, and we beat them that first game, and it was a great game. It was 0-0 on the fourth or fifth, and we pushed out a run and then kind of piled on at the end. But that was a great team, and then we were on to Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Well, yeah, I know you guys went to the regional and didn't have really super high expectations going there because, you know, Iowa teams had not fared well there in the past, right?
Not at all. We were told that no Iowa team had won a game there. So our goal was to there were 10 teams that went. It's a 13-state regional, 10 teams that went. And we had our hope was to win a game, but really our greatest hope was to make it to the bracket. Bracket play was the top six teams. So we felt like 2-2 would get us into bracket play, you know, maybe. So our hope was to win two games, and we just tore into that tournament like nothing. We played a really, really good Michigan team on our first game, which was rained out on the Friday night. So we were put in the unenviable position of having to play a doubleheader with, under Little League rules, is like 114 in games. So you're really hamstrung on pitching, catching, things like that. So and that game I'll never forget because it was about, we're supposed to start at 10 and the grounds just were still wet from the night before. My team, literally 8 or 10 of our parents got out their shovels and started helping the grounds crew, got that field ready. We're losing 3-0. We gave up a 2-run homer in the first, and our kids were just shell-shocked, you could tell, in the first inning. And then we scratched out a run in the second, and then my knucklehead kid, who's never hit a home run, hits a 3-run homer to put us in the lead. We end up just walloping them 15-4 and really feel like now we're going to do something. We played the Illinois team later that day and crushed them, and we were kind of on our way then.
Well, yeah, you guys ended up going 6-0 in the tournament. You outscored your opponents 56-10. I'm sure that was, you know, above and beyond what you ever expected.
It really was. And the funny thing is, the Michigan game, we had to play a semifinal against them again, and that was, we felt, the second best team. Ohio was undefeated in pool play along with us, but and Indiana beat them. Indiana, I think, was the third best team. We played both Michigan and Indiana, I think the second and third best teams, twice. I mean, that was the way it shook out. But we handled them. The second time we played Michigan, much, much different. We scratched that one out. We were losing by 3 runs again, came back and got some big hits. And Damon Churchman pitched the end of that game and just shut him down. And and we knew we were on to the championship. We knew it was a good Indiana team, but we were ready.
Well, of course, then you guys went on to the League World Series yes. Last week out in California. You lost your first game. You won the second game. No Central Regional team had ever won a game at the World Series. So obviously you guys broke a string there. I mean, you got a lot to be proud of.
Well, we do. And, you know, we were, again, first game out, our motto has always been, you know, the team that has the most fun is the team that's going to win. And when we play tight, we don't play well. And so before the championship weekend in Michigan, I broke out the Frisbees and we were loose and having fun. We didn't really have that opportunity when we were playing California. But it was still fun. We beat a good New York team. We ended up playing Australia and the Czech Republic also. They weren't bracket play games. They were friendlies, what they call them. But they, you know, we had... They did the national anthem, they did everything, and our kids, you know, did a really good job against both those teams. So we, in our minds, we went 3-2 in California, and that was more than we could have ever hoped for.
Oh, that's great. Well, you guys were eliminated from the bracket part of the tournament, though, with a loss to the host team from Livermore, California, which went on to win the U.S. Championship,
They did.
Did that make you feel any better that you lost to them and they went on?
Yeah, but it's so tantalizing because, you know, and I hope the Livermore people aren't hearing this, and I'm sure they're not, but we felt like we were just as good as them. And we were just, you know, a play here, a play there from getting back into that one always. And they were a good team. They're a team that plays year-round baseball, have been together reportedly for 8 years. We're hearing all this stuff. You know, we're from Iowa. We don't play year-round baseball. The Texas team, the Florida teams, those teams play year-round, and you can tell there's a benefit there. But we're just this ragamuffin knucklehead group of kids that played really well, don't play year-round, and still did some damage.
Well, you guys certainly made this whole town of Ankeny proud along the way.
No, that's great. No, and these are just great kids and great families. You know, Little League means a lot to those of us. UTRIP is just an entity, kind of a cult unto itself. And all these kids, we actually pulled from 4 UTRIP teams in our age group, if you can believe that, in Ankeny. And UTRIP's great in terms of development and fun, but it's just not the same thing as Little League. Little League still stands for the proposition that, you know, it's equal access. We want to have fun. We want to make sure kids are, you know, doing it the right way and having fun. And so we really push Little League, and I'm glad we do at with our age. I think and I hope that this will help those older kids who have dropped off from coming back. I think it's a great thing. There's no secret that a lot of these kids go out for the All-Star experience. Okay. I mean, it's great. That's a great reason to go out. And we got a taste last year in the state tournament and came up a little short. And really, I think the kids were ready to come back and do some damage, and they did. So.
Well, I noticed at the World Series in the games that I watched online there that you guys shuffled your pitchers around a lot. Was that because you were playing, you know, back-to-back days a lot and you wanted to keep those guys eligible to pitch again the next day?
Yeah, there's some really stringent rules. Little League has rules. If you pitch 21 pitches, you can't pitch the next day. If you pitch 35, you have to rest a day. 50, you have to rest two. I mean, so there are real – it's tough. And that's where the managing or the the decision making really comes in, because you want to play for today, but you have to be mindful of the rest of the tournament. And I think that's the luxury we had in Michigan, was that, you know, we held back some pitchers for that bracket play and could really hit those teams then with a team that they hadn't seen. We played a 3-0 Indiana team. We were 3-0, and it was one of those things. If we're the one seed, is there a benefit? Should we try for it? You know, there was all that, and we pitched, you know, a kid who was probably arguably our three, and he ended up pitching a 2-hit shutout. It was great, Isaac Peck, just a masterful performance. So you never know. They're 13, you know, they're going to do what they got to do.
Well, I know you told me before that, you know, you had like 6 or 7 kids that you could use, and there wasn't much drop off. So do you think that pitching depth was the key to your success?
You know, I still think it's our hitting. It was one of those situations where I just felt like if we scored our 7 runs because of our pitching depth, we were going to be able to win. And that's why Livermore was a bit of an aberration. You know, ironically, San Diego scored 7, and that's always been kind of my number. I just think we're always going to score at least 7. And then it didn't happen, obviously, against Livermore. But, yeah, I think if the kids – if they're not nervous, if they're up there having fun, they were just, I mean, there's not anybody on that team where I thought, oh no, here he comes, he's not going to be able to get a hit. And that's 1 through 11, and that's such a luxury. And so that was amazing. But then it always comes down to, I don't care if it's the major league level or 8 years old, you got to make plays. You got to play defense. And I think the kids really learn that, you know, run prevention is just as important as run production. And so when kids are making outfield plays or throwing kids out on the bases, they see what a important thing that is. And I think that's really the key. I think in Livermore, they just made more plays than we did. So,
gee, Corey, you really sound like a coach here.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, for people that don't know, Corey and I graduated together from Ankeny High School a long time ago.
Years. I did miss our reunion because of this stupid tournament, and that we were in Sioux City. The kids missed Summerfest. They were all bummed, but I think it worked out in the end. So.
Yeah, you missed a good time.
I bet I did.
Well, the Livermore team that we've been talking about, they went on then to lose to the Asia Pacific team 10-0 in the World Championship game. Now, did you get a chance to see the Asia Pacific team play at all?
I sure did. Oh, my goodness. So I'm up by their bullpen, and their coaches were so gracious. They had an interpreter, and he gave me this beautiful necklace, this something, and it was just amazing. So through the interpreter, I was just asking him, because I saw this kid warming up, and this kid was the most dominant pitcher I'd ever seen at this age. And the interpreter very politely said, "Yeah, that's our number three."
Wow!
And so then the number two comes in, and it was, and I'm not exaggerating. It was 85 with movement, and it's just there's, and I love my kids, and they hit, and they could sit on a fastball like nobody. But I don't know that we could have done anything with that team. They were just, and we had found out it was Korea. And then everybody else. And we kind of saw that. We'd love to have played Mexico. I think Puerto Rico was much better than they got credit for. And they were the defending champions. And they are all like 6 feet tall. I mean, that was, you know. But that South Korean team was unbelievable.
Oh.
13 years old. I mean, it's just unreal.
Well, now, what was the experience like for the boys off the field? Did they get a chance to mingle with a lot of the international players throughout the week?
They did. That's why those friendlies were so important and such a great experience. You know, playing those games was just magical. In fact, there were two young women on the teams that we played. Czech Republic had a young woman, and she was great. And then the Southeast region team from Florida had a girl, and she might have been one of the top five athletes there.
Wow.
She was phenomenal. I don't know if you saw her pitch. She caught. She was throwing guys out left and right. She was just a force. But so it's hard. It is overwhelming. But I think the kids, our kids especially, did a really good job of mingling with the other kids. They do this pin exchange, so you get some pins from the other team. And Jack Whitfer from our representative got us a bunch of pins that we had brought out, so we could have some Iowa pins out there, and we exchanged pins, which was great. Ankeny Little League provided some pins, so that was an amazing experience. And then one of the umpire's sons, some 9 or 10 year old, really just adopted our team, and it was so cute. And he literally, I'm sure it's because they're all knuckleheads and my kids act like they're 9 or 10 anyway, but but they met at the pool, and this kid, his umpire dad worked a bunch of games, and he rode on the bus with us, he ate with us, he wore an Ankeny, Iowa shirt the whole week, and it was just adorable, and he was great. And he's from Bangor, Maine. I mean, just one of those things. But yeah, seeing the kids interact, having the kids experience it. I'm not going to say that the kids probably didn't run out of gas. I think we all did at some level. But they were just so tremendous. And the parents were just unbelievable. I mean, we had two parents literally ride with us to go to Omaha to help, corral these kids. And then we had parents stay and help kind of, make sure we had everything at the end. It was just an unbelievable experience. And my hat's off to every single one of those parents and those boys.
Well, speaking of the parents, I know that you guys created a GoFundMe account before the World Series because you were trying to raise some money to help pay for some of the families of the players to get out there. So did most of the families, were they able to make it out there?
That's a great question, something I really wanted to touch base on. I actually caught some grief on my little, I didn't know how to tweet really before, and I was trying to tweet throughout to get this out there. We have... Our Little League has done such a great job, and they did such a great job of supporting us to Sioux City and supporting us to Kalamazoo, but this is kind of uncharted territory for everybody. And as much as our Little League wanted to help, I think they were hamstrung by some rules and things too. So their suggestion was to set up this GoFundMe, and we have teachers, laborers as parents, Polk County Sheriff. So we have people that this just isn't their norm. And to take this extended time off, to set up daycare, to have someone watch dogs, to do all the things that we have to do when we're not home, to support their sons through this journey, it costs a lot of money. And And it's not too late. I mean, it's not too late. I just think it might be some after the fact things, but, and I'm not looking to make a cent off of this, obviously. This is about these kids being supported, and I can't, I mean, my parents went to Kalamazoo, but they weren't able to go to San Francisco. There were a lot of people that, you know, could drive or make the, justify the drive to Kalamazoo that couldn't get to San Francisco, but we had on our team, and I'm happy to report, all 11 kids had at least one parent there. And we did, we rallied as a group to try to make sure that people had cars or travel or rooms or accommodations, and they were able to stay at the hotel with us. They gave us a group rate, which was great. But it's something else. And so my point is, with this GoFundMe was, if we can help defray these costs, everybody, we had parents give up vacations, obviously. One of our families had their parents had a 50th wedding, you know, wedding anniversary celebration that, you know, they had to miss. So many kind of sacrifices that way, but at the same time, I can't imagine that any of them would have given up this opportunity. We had a day off that we were able to take a little day trip into San Francisco, and we just did all the free stuff, and it was great. But it's an important thing. I just think... For me, this is about our community stepping up, obviously, but you know, we want to encourage pro-social activities for these kids. If they're not playing ball, they're doing something else. And if that something else, just generally speaking, isn't as positive as being out there with gloves and bats and balls. And so I really hope that's a message that resonates. I really hope people will step up. It's not too late. Carl Chevrolet donated a van, an Econoline van, which I literally don't know how we would have got our kids to Omaha without it. It was just such a gracious thing. And Tony Mills from Carl Chevrolet did that, and my hat's off to him and them for stepping up. And I think other people, it's kind of late in finding out, but it's not too late, and that GoFundMe is going to stay up until it's not. John Deere has stepped up. I'm going to recognize all the GoFundMe donors tonight at the celebration that we have, because I think, I don't care if you gave $5, it's worth it to us because it helped defray costs. So,
well, the turnaround that you guys had from the regional to the World Series was just so quick. I can't even imagine what it was like trying to get that organized.
It was surreal. There, to go from Sioux City to Kalamazoo was, you know, we had 3 or 4 days, and so we show up at an 8 o'clock meeting on Friday morning. I'm sorry, Thursday morning in Kalamazoo. We win that tournament, and we are to be on a plane that next night out of Detroit to go to Livermore, California. And I called the Little League International people in Williamsport, and I begged them, can we please try to fly out of somewhere closer to home, maybe fly back somewhere closer to home? It's just, you know, Detroit's such a long haul. I can't imagine it. And they were great. The gentleman there said, you know what, I'm going to work with you. We were waiting at Thursday night at pensively as parents, you know, are we going home or we didn't know literally until then. That night about 11:15, I got an email saying, okay, we've definitely got you flying back closer to home. You know, I gave him Kansas City, Omaha, Des Moines, Minneapolis, anywhere. We don't know yet where you're going to fly out of. And then they said, okay, we've got you flying out Friday at 6 a.m. So we all hightailed it from Kalamazoo, got home at like 7 or 8, and then had to leave at 3 a.m. to go on a bus or on this Econoline van to get to home. It was just crazy. So you can't prepare. You couldn't do anything. We washed our clothes. We had time to wash our clothes basically, and you know, lived out of the same suitcase. So it was crazy.
Well, and if you'd flown out of Detroit, you guys probably hadn't packed enough clothes for like another week.
Absolutely not. Just ridiculous. We had the most wonderful parents step forward and have wash detail. This is just a funny aside, but representative of our team. My team at the state tournament against Indianola and against Johnston, Indianola, and Sioux City, we played teams that had the most unbelievable uniforms. They were really cool. And our kids had great tops, but we didn't, we were just a ragamuffin. We had 5 different colored pants. I mean, it was so funny. I mean, white, gray, black. I mean, it's just craziness. And so when we got to, when we got to Kalamazoo, I went to the Dick's there and I said, look, I'm going to buy 11 pair of black pants. And I got everybody to send me their, and we did it, and it was great. And they looked so great. We decided we were going to wear gray because everybody had gray, but we were also different, you know, shades. And then we got the black and we looked pretty cool, and it was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, just a couple other things I wanted to touch on with you, Corey. Of course, Urbandale just recently won the Class 4A state baseball title, and many of those kids played in the Little League World Series back in 2012. So do you think that this group of Ankeny boys maybe has that potential down the road to maybe win a state championship, either for Ankeny or Centennial? I don't know what the split's like with
your
kids.
Well, that's a great question. I wish this was one team, that's for sure. I mean, I'm all in support of Ankeny splitting up, but for baseball, I wish we could have stayed as one because they would have done some damage. But we have a pretty good split. I think it's 7 north and 4 south. I think this experience alone is going to solidify for some of them the kind of rededication or commitment to baseball to begin with. But yeah, I think we have some players who are going to you know, play in the high school ranks certainly. And I think that this is going to get some of those kids who are kind of on the fence about going out for Little League. I was pushing my son to talk to some of his friends who we knew were pretty good, you know, to go out. I think maybe we'll get them to go out next year too, and that's just going to grow this game even more in our community anyway.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great. And now most of these kids on the team, do you think some of them will be like baseball-only players, or do you think some of them are like multi-sport athletes?
Most of them are multi-sport athletes. My son doesn't play football just because I've got, you know, the CTE thing seems real, but a lot of the kids play football. A lot of the kids play basketball. We have a lacrosse player. We have a rugby player. We have a bunch. We just have a really diverse group of kids. So I do think, I think if you ask them now, now would be the time to ask them if they really wanted to pick one sport. I think most of them on this team would say baseball. But I don't know. You know, I think a couple of them are really talented basketball players. You know, so it remains, and football players, it remains to be seen. But I think, if anything, their love for this game grew. There's no question.
Well, Corey, it's been great to hear about your experiences out there. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you, Dan. It was great. Great to see you.
You bet. Well, Iowa Realty is very proud and fortunate to have Home Services Lending, Iowa Title, Midland Title and Escrow, and Home Services Insurance as part of their one-stop shopping model. They're able to help you buy and sell anywhere in the state of Iowa. They can also help you, your family, and friends who are moving from anywhere to anywhere in the world through their business affiliates. If you would like information on how to become a realtor, you can call Mike Stanbro at 453-5350, or you can email Mike at mikestanbro, that's STANBROUGH, at iowarealty.com. You've been listening to the Ankeny Fanatic Weekly Podcast. Come back next week when we'll have another very special guest.